And good evening, I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. China's borders will reopen on Sunday, January 8th. And this comes some 3 years after the start of the pandemic. Before this, China had one of the toughest anti-COVID regimes in the world, known as its zero-COVID policy. Countries around the world are expressing concern over a new wave of infections following China's relaxation of its zero-COVID rules. How worried should Malaysia be? Joining me now is consultant infectious diseases physician, Dr. Christopher Lee. He was previously the Deputy Director General of Health for Research and Technical Support. Dr. Lee, thank you for joining me on the show today. Can we start with the big picture first? I mean, what do we know about the size and the severity of the surge of COVID in China?
And that's the problem from the very outset, because the data is unclear. I mean, I'm sure you have seen the latest remarks or statement coming from WHO saying that they wish there was more transparency of data coming out of China. And obviously, if we are talking about a rational response or a more proportionate response, it's difficult unless we get a clearer picture of what's really happening in China. Now, the official data coming from China, from the Chinese authorities, is that the number of deaths are not remarkably high. In fact, they quoted how many single-digit deaths per day. But of course, we have all seen social media, and we have seen the pictures. We have seen pictures in the clinics and hospitals. We have seen pictures in the mortuaries and body bags. So there's a disconnect there about which is which. So we do hope that we can only look at the official data coming out of it. But the truth is probably somewhere in the middle, very likely the case. Now, there's clearly a surge, I think, in terms of number of cases, there's no question. And during a peak of a surge, they are opening up the borders and opening up the Chinese society as well. And of course, that will lead to a surge, a bigger surge. Just imagine they have been locked down for, nearly 2 years? Two years, all right? So their innate immunity in the community probably would be relatively low, compared to countries that have been open now for quite a while. Many of us probably did get infected, but mild infections after the vaccination. And our immunity now has been reboosted by the ongoing infections in the community. But if you're in China now and you've been locked up for so long, now you're released. So many of them may not have been, number one, there are some people still not vaccinated. Number two, even if they were vaccinated 1 year plus ago, their immunity would have waned. But now they are let loose into the society, their likelihood of catching infection is extremely high, all at the same time, because China is opening its doors all at the same time. So everybody goes up at the same time. So I think that adds to the bigger surge that we are seeing now.
So what are the concerns about the consequences of the reopening of borders and everybody going out at the same time? Is it just about a surge of new cases of infections? There's been discussion or talk about China being the source of a new, maybe more dangerous variant. What is the thinking behind that, Dr. Lee?
Now, we know that in China, based on the official data that they've released, the variant that's going around there is the BF7, which is the one going around. And BF7 is around the world in many places, including Malaysia. We have had BF7 earlier or the middle of last year, if I'm not mistaken. So it's not something new to us. Now, if that information is accurate and the surge now is mainly because of the release of all those restrictions, that's why the surge has increased, and the fact that vaccination has waned. So this surge is mainly driven by the infrastructure or the situation of immunization in China. And in Malaysia, where we are pretty much well vaccinated, of course, we could be boosted better, I'm sure we would agree. We may not be in such a difficult situation. But at the end, I think all of us are worried that there could be a new variant coming through that we are not aware of. Okay. And that goes back to the history where data coming up from China sometimes has not been that transparent. That doubt is there. And that is why the latest statement from WHO drives that point through. So the concern is, if it's just BF7 and standard variants that we are seeing now, then the concern for a country like Malaysia may not be so high because we are pretty well vaccinated. But if it's a new variant, especially a variant that can have some immune escape, meaning they can run away from the vaccines, the effectiveness of the vaccines that we have now, then that could be of concern.
So is this concern of a new variant, is that why Malaysia has opted to have this wastewater testing from aircraft traveling from China? What is the evidence base of this approach? Is it sound public health policy, particularly if you're thinking about not just the surge in new infections, but also determining new variants, the presence of new variants in the country?
I mean, wastewater surveillance has been now proven to be a good public health tool, especially when you want to look at, it's like a big, good snapshot of what's happening in the country. Terrible, we have to look at poop to decide what's happening in the country. It's amazing. But the data has been pretty solid over the last 2 years with COVID around the world. So this is a good way of picking up fairly early entry of new variants into the country. Now, it is not meant to detect who's positive because the poop is all the poop in the wastewater is together. We don't know who is infected, who's not. So it's after the fact, it's for surveillance, all right? And if we do find COVID, then they will do genomic testing to see whether there's a standard variant or something new on the horizon. And that gives us a bit of a heads up. This is important, especially when, at the end of the day, there's doubt whether the country of origin is completely transparent with the data. So many countries are doing that, and I'm glad MOH is also doing that for this to deal with this Chinese surge.
What do you make of those calls to suspend entry of arrivals from China? Is that an overreaction?
Yeah, well, I think over the last 2-3 years now, almost 3 years, we know that the stopping borders though it doesn't prevent the virus from coming in. All it does is probably slow it down a bit. So I think it's difficult for many countries not to do any screening at the borders. I think the public sentiment would be very strong. I can understand that. But I think it's important to realize that whatever we do at the borders is never going to be 100%. It's just probably risk control or damage control at best. So It is important to continue to strengthen what we have locally, what we can control locally. That is number one, getting our vaccinations up to date, getting those who are unvaxxed. There are still folks out there who are unvaxxed, especially the older folks, get them vaccinated. Those who have been vaccinated, make sure they get boosted. I think the latest data from our country was 50% were first boosters, right? And less than 2% with the second booster. So we do have to be more aggressive now, getting folks who have doubts about boosting to be boosted.
I do want to talk about the booster coverage, which is unfortunately woefully thin in our country. But just on the note about what we do at the borders, right? What we're seeing now is that countries around the world, there's this growing divergence in the way countries are responding to China's reopening. We saw that almost exactly a year ago when the world was dealing with Omicron. And I think this comes back to what you were saying about maybe the lack of data or transparency or even trust in the accuracy of the data that's being shared from China at the moment. Do you then think that a country's response to China's reopening should then be dependent on the robustness of its health system, the domestic vaccination and booster coverage? Should all of that be dependent on the country itself as opposed to, say, a universal approach to the reopening of China?
Well, I mean, you've hit the nail right on the head. Obviously, we have to look at where this new variant, inverted commas, if there's a new variant out there, where it's coming from. And of course, the host country, if you like, if the data is transparent, their infrastructure is good, of course, there are less concerns, no question about that. But I think, unfortunately, I think the World Health Organization has probably to take a stronger role. It has given a lot of general guidance, which tells people, you know, border controls may not be very effective. Stopping people from coming over may not be effective. And that is exactly the point. If Malaysia goes very hard on stopping the Chinese tourists from coming in, but the Chinese tourists can go other countries, right? tourists from those countries come to Malaysia. We are not stopping Malaysia. Let's be frank. Malaysia is open for business. I think our Prime Minister is very, very clear. We are open for business. We just have to make sure we do it as safely as we can. So the fact that some countries close down in China, some countries don't go somewhere in China, but the other tourists, the other travelers can move from one other country to another freely, it's probably not going to be very effective. So, but I, as I mentioned before, it has to be a proportionate response, isn't it? We are certainly do not want to overdo it because it will affect us badly as well. Number two, we also do not want to underdo things because we might put ourselves at risk.
Do you think there should be any change to Malaysia's current COVID SOPs?
You mean local SOPs?
Yeah, Malaysia's SOPs.
Well,
yes.
My personal view is, of course, masking should be back up again, all right? And I would urge the government to consider, at least for a temporary period, for the next month or next 2 months, because Chinese New Year is around the corner as well, maybe in all public indoor spaces, the mask is mandated. I think it's probably safer to say, let's put in a mask mandate, indoor mask mandate, for a temporary period, for 2 months. Give a start date, give an end date, all right? And if things improve faster, we can end earlier. That's easy. Telling people not to wear a mask is very easy, all right? So I think that may be easier than saying, telling people to encourage. Even as we're talking now, Melissa, there are some folks out there, some countries take this very seriously, maybe too seriously. Some don't give a hoot about it, all right? So even our Malaysians at the same time, some people take vaccination and COVID very seriously. There are still folks, unfortunately, who think COVID was, a bit of a flu, all right? And we overreacted. That happens even in Malaysia today. But if the government or the Ministry of Health gives a clear mandate based on prudence, and that's the word, all right? Prudence, because we don't know. If WHO can say they are not definitely sure of what's really coming up from China and urging China officially in an official communique to be more transparent and quick with their information coming out, I think it's clear there are doubts. We are doing it because we have doubts. And if you have doubts, I think we always move towards the side of the caution, as long as we don't overdo anything. I am one who always believe mask is not a difficult thing. We have been wearing masks for 3 years now. We've got pretty used to it, you know? And the good thing is the price of the mask is cheap. Masking is a cheap event. It doesn't stop us from doing anything we normally do in our daily activities, and commerce can carry on. So I think it's a very low-hanging fruit to push.
Well, what about boosters? Because you brought up earlier that boosters, coverage very thin, and again, particularly the older and most vulnerable population, we're seeing very few numbers coming up from that that population, that segment of the population. How can we, I mean, this is another low-hanging fruit, how might we be able to increase participation for boosters, better boost the population?
Correct. And I must applaud the Ministry of Health and the Minister of Health in particular for announcing that from January the 9th, if I'm not mistaken, they are letting anyone in that group, the aged and those who are vulnerable, walk in any clinic, kesehatan or hospital and get their booster jabs. And that's a good start, all right? But I do feel it's not enough. Those who have not boosted, I mean, and we have heard in social media, many people say, oh, I'm not going to go for my fourth shot for whatever reason. I do think there should be also active engagement with the stakeholders in that population. For example, the aged care population. We have to go out there and look at the old folks' homes again, the aged care homes again, work with geriatric and aged care associations to, and also local leaders on the ground, isn't it? Politicians, religious leaders, to get the older folks protected. I do believe just announcing in the press and say, oh, please come and get your shots. The shots were available for quite some time. If for a long time they haven't boosted, I'm not sure how many more will come. It's a good first, don't get me wrong. The announcement helps. But I do think we need our people on the ground to go out to talk to people.
You reckon it's
mainly an issue of communication and information. Is that what you're saying?
I use the term engagement rather than communication, because communication sometimes is a press statement. You know that for some
it's people, one way.
You know, it may not work for many people, all right? Many people don't even read social media or the newspapers. but going up to engage with the community, and that's important. So working with local leaders on both sides of the divide, I think that's important. We are protecting everyone. We should not look into that. So I do think there should be more active engagement and communication on the ground. I think what is coming up from KKM is sufficient. DG has said it many times. The minister herself has said it many times, all right? But whether they say it one more time tomorrow makes a difference, I really don't think so. I think that's a point. So they have to go beyond that. So if we believe boosting is important, and I think we need to show us the country, we believe boosting is so important, we are going out there to talk to you because we feel it's so important. It's extra work, absolutely, but we think that's important. So I think that's it also sends a message that we are going over and above our usual business as usual type of work to get this done.
Right.
Because I think everybody agrees on that boosting should increase. I mean, everybody agrees on that. So there's no division there. So let's get it done.
Well, thank you so much for speaking with me today. Consultant infectious diseases physician, Dr. Christopher Lee there. We're going to take a quick break here and consider this. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. Let's continue our discussion about the global concern over a new surge of infections following China's relaxation of its COVID-19 rules, or what it's calling its zero COVID policy, and the reopening of its borders. Joining me now is Professor Dr. Sharifah Izzat Wanpute. She's a specialist in health economy and public health at Universiti Kebangsaan Malaysia. Dr. Izzat, thank you for joining me on the show. How concerned do you think we should be about the reopening of China's borders? How concerned should Malaysia be?
Well, I think Malaysia, we have a lot of people coming in, including from China. And we are going to see an influx of people and tourists, and of course, visitors coming in from the mainland. We are approaching not only the New Year, but also the Chinese New Year. So we have to be worried. We have to be very cautious because we have seen how COVID actually manifested in China, how the original Wuhan virus actually transmitted into the whole global pandemic. And we are seeing something, well, probably it's not as bad, but we are going to see something in this next few days. We know that China has opened up its borders. You know, they have reduced their so-called no COVID policies, meaning that they are opening up the borders and everyone's going out and things like that. Most of the Chinese or so-called the people in China, the main affected ones are the elderly. Mm-hmm. And they are the one which are supposedly there's less booster for them, and we are also worried because some of the cases might be coming into Malaysia as well. And the issue is that they have a few strains. It's not really we are not really sure which strain. There are many strains that have been purported, including the BF7, you know, a few other strains as well. And we know that the strains are already available in other countries as well, including in US and things like that. And so if we are, you know, too relaxed, we might see the influx as well in Malaysia. Now, our coverage of boosters in Malaysia is quite not that bad. It's almost 50%. So that is considered the third dose. And we have been protected not only by Sinovac, we are also protected by the mRNA virus, which is from Pfizer, Moderna, and things like that, which has been said and has been studied to have higher efficacy compared to the, you know, the inactivated or adenovirus vaccines, which are available. So in that sense, Malaysia is probably better positioned to counter this. The issue is that we still have a huge burden of non-communicable diseases. I mean, people affected with obesity, people affected with diabetes, hypertension, stroke, heart disease, and so on. They are at higher risk towards this variant, and we have to be careful because the variant is supposed to be very highly transmittable. It is supposedly probably similar virulence with the Omicron. This strain is basically from the lineage of Omicron as well. So we have to be cautious and worried. So I would actually propose, in certain countries, they have basically banned tourists from China.
That's
upfront,
right. Yeah.
Banning. Yeah. So if we can implement some sort of policy like that, that would be really good. But I don't think that the government will be able to do that.
So Malaysia has said that it's going to be screening all the inbound travellers for fever. They're going to also be testing wastewater from the aircraft coming in from China. But as you said, there are countries who are banning. In fact, in Malaysia itself, there are calls to suspend entry from arrivals from China. Are you saying you agree with this approach, that we should be thinking about suspending all entry of arrivals?
Yeah, we should be thinking about that. If we don't feel, or we have certain policies that say that we want to continue allowing them, then we have not only to screen the wastewater, because screening of wastewater means that, you know, the virus burden is there. You know, the flight is carrying a lot of people with this virus. So that's the wastewater, indication. But once they come in, they might not have symptoms. That's the issue. So if we screen for people with fever, we might actually allow people with no symptoms to come in into the country. So the best thing would be to actually do a 48 hours PCR and to make sure a compulsory quarantine for at least 5 days, and, you know, get a repeat negative PCR, or make sure that they are negative. And if they do come into Malaysia, in a way, they have to make sure that they actually report.
So I think what I am trying to understand here is that you're hoping that Malaysia takes a more cautious approach to the reopening of the borders. In that case, then, I mean, are there things that we can do domestically to better strengthen our defenses against what is expected to be a surge in COVID cases? I mean, you mentioned that Malaysia's COVID booster for the third dose is quite strong, but for the fourth dose, our second booster coverage is woefully thin, particularly amongst the elderly population. And there doesn't seem to be much change. I mean, for the past year or so, we've heard a lot of talk about, you know, encouragement, get your booster, get your fourth dose. But the take-up rate is still low. What else can be done, Dr. Izzat, to encourage a better protected Malaysian society, particularly the more vulnerable segment of society?
Correct. Yeah, we have to be really scientifically, approached towards this. We know that the high risk are people with obesity. We know that the high risk are people with many comorbidities, and also the elderly. Now, these can be targeted. That means we know if they are living in the old folks' home or things like that. So we must make sure that we cover these areas. So in the sense that sometimes we ask patients to come, or we ask population to come to the centres. But in certain cases, probably it has to be targeted. That means we go down to these areas, to the old folks' home, and do active vaccination for them, especially people who are not mobile, who are not able to come forward and actually access the vaccine. Now, this is issues of vaccine inequality. Thank God in Malaysia, this is considered a public health approach, meaning that if you don't have to really pay, you know, you can get it for free, blah, 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 which is good. And this is something that, you know, most of the countries are not having that sort of luxury. So in Malaysia, our third dose, meaning that our first booster, is nearly 50%, and we want to increase that, if possible, to 70%. The fourth dose, of course, it is good for people to go and obtain this vaccine. But the other aspect is that make sure that you adhere to the basic public health strategies, things like washing your hands, you know, try to avoid areas which is congregated, you know, Big Macs, congregations. If you know that some of your friends are traveling from outside of Malaysia, that means they're coming in from foreign countries and things like that, try to stay away for the next few days. Make sure that they are asymptomatic and they are negative before you actually meet them.
I spoke to Dr. Christopher Lee a little bit earlier, and he suggested that the government think about bringing back temporarily the mask mandate. Do you agree with that? In terms of public health and public behaviour, do you think it's bringing back public a mask mandate temporarily is something that can be done? Telling people you must wear at this point to this point or a certain date, is that something that's achievable?
I think Malaysia, in a way, our mask adherence is relatively good. During the COVID and things like that. And so for me personally, I have been wearing my mask ever since we have opened. Even during the endemicity, I have been using my mask, because of course we work near the hospital, but we are also seeing a lot of at-risk people. We are going abroad, so we ourselves are at risk. So for please, for Malaysia as well, I would actually concur to impose that our Malaysians, especially the higher risk, to wear your mask. We don't know where this thing is coming from. We don't want to get infected in the first place. We don't want to get reinfected the second time. Your risk of getting long COVID, your risk of getting subsequent complication from cardio, from respi, from neuro complications are higher if you get reinfected with COVID. So first place, not to get COVID. Second place, not to get reinfected with COVID. So if you wear your mask, it's just a small price to pay, you know, a bit of discomfort. But at this point in time where there's a lot of high risk, you don't want to get infected. There's a lot of financial risk if you get infection and things like that. You're not able to work. You have a loss of income. You really don't feel well. You might even, you know, in some cases, you might even die or succumb, be admitted for a long time, intubated. So the benefit, if you do a cost benefit analysis, I mean, I'm in economics terms, your benefit is so much greater if you wear your mask, which is a very simple thing, rather than, you know, you say that, oh, I'm restrictive, this is restrictive, I'm a prison, but this is just a small price to pay, especially if you're working in a closed condition, very minimal ventilation, wear your mask, you don't know who's carrying the thing. And the issue is that sometimes you feel that you're well enough or you're strong enough. The issue is that you might pass this to your children who are not vaccinated, maybe your small ones, or you might be living with your parents, your elderly, your grandmother and things like that. So you might actually bring this back home and you might infect them.
Thank you so much, Dr. Izzat. Public Health Specialist Professor Dr. Sharifah Izzat Wan Putih there, wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching and good night.